Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the roundtable for this Friday, the 2nd of May. How's your day going? Ours is great. We have a lot to talk about this morning and want to share it with you. And we have a lot going on today, so we'll get to it in just a moment. As always, we welcome your thoughts. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. As I mentioned in the billboard to the program, overnight, President Trump signed an executive order Thursday directing the Corporation for Public Broadcasting's board of directors to, quote, cease federal funding for NPR and PBS. Yes, we knew this was coming, but how and when, we did not. So now we know at least that part of it. Trump contends that news coverage by NPR and PBS contain a left-wing bias. The federal funding for NPR and PBS is appropriated by Congress. So we want to discuss all of this, and we have a wonderful group to do it with. We have Heather Mulligan, who is CEO of the Business Council of New York State. Good morning, Heather.
Good morning.
And Judy Patrick, Vice President for Editorial Development of the New York Press Association. Good morning, Judy.
Good morning, Jeff.
Sarah LaDuke is here, roundtable producer. Good morning, Sarah.
Hi, Joe.
And our other Sarah, who is the CEO of WAMC, Sarah Gilbert, joins us. And obviously, I'll start with her on the thoughts as to what we should make of this.
Hello, everybody. Happy Friday, as they say.
do they?
Yeah.
No, they usually
they
do.
Should. They should. Look. You know, there's been this stuff in the ether for a while. We've known that something was coming. There's already an FCC investigation underway. There are various efforts on the Hill and now this latest executive order. Federal funding is a relatively small part of the public media pie. And the core message that I think we should focus on in a moment which feels very disruptive and feels very unsettling is that the reason why public media is strong is that it has a very strong community. It's part of a very strong community. We are utterly focused on continuing to deliver all of the things that make public media singular and precious and irreplaceable. And whilst I'm happy to be here today to talk about all of the ramifications of this and what we as a community can do to support gold standard journalism, we should be reassured that we're not going anywhere and our service is uninterrupted.
So let's get to the what we can do, because I think that's what people have been asking, not so much, I mean, not just in when it comes to federal funding, but in so many aspects as to what has been happening in the first 100 days of the Trump administration. But the question comes specifically on this issue of funding for public broadcasting and what can we do?
Well, there are two things that we would like to ask you, our community, to do in this moment. First of all, we want to bring more people into our family and into our community and continue to add to the many voices which make our vibrant, robust debate a wonderful and unique thing. So if you have family members, friends, relatives, invite them to join our family. As you know, you do not have to donate to do that. You can simply sign up for a newsletter. But if you would like to donate, that's also a lovely thing to do. And you can go to our website this morning and do so.
WAMC.org, WAMC.org.
We've also just been informed inside the studio that we can take calls if people prefer to dial in. The staff is ready to take pledges from people who would rather use the phone than the website, 1-800-323-9262.
1-800-323-9262, 1-800-323-WAMC. I just want to read for a moment what the president said on Truth Social. Again, this came like this did come in the middle of the night. And so We didn't know when it was going to come, but this is when it came. On social media platforms, Trump blasted to a primary public broadcasting networks, posting in all caps, Republicans must defund and totally disassociate themselves from NPR and PBS, the radical left monsters, quote unquote, that so badly hurt our country. Sarah.
Well, I would like to call on a voice from history to respond to that. I want to share with you the words of the legendary Bill Siemering, who actually wrote NPR's first mission statement a little over 50 years ago. I think it still holds up. Here it is. National Public Radio will serve the individual. It will promote personal growth. It will regard the individual differences with respect and joy rather than derision and hate. It will celebrate the human experience as infinitely varied rather than vacuous and banal. And it will encourage a sense of active, constructive participation rather than apathetic helplessness.
Wow.
Yeah. It's what it's all about.
It is what it is all about. The idea, though, that you've been through this for a long time, we've all been through this for a long time, that there has always been a bit of a bullseye on the back of public broadcasting, and that goes back to the 60s, right?
Well, there's some good reasons for that. I mean, public broadcasting was created, okay, I'm going to own up to it, it's the Brits that started it, and it was created.
Don't make anyone take responsibility for their whole nation.
It doesn't mean it's bad.
It's not possible.
That's what I thought.
Yes, dastardly Brits. So it was created after World War One in a very particular kind of era when, you know, the public, due to a horrible, horrible, unbelievably, you know, horrendous few years, the public had lost interest in many of their institutions. And a group of people came together to create something which was accountable to the public only. It wasn't accountable to big corporations. It wasn't accountable to advertisers. It was there to serve the people and to answer only to the people. And there are some who find that threatening, and they would prefer to have influence. And that's why public media matters so much, and why it is so singular, is that we alone are accountable just to you.
1-800-323-9262, WAMC.org. I'm struck because this has been a week for us. We had a beautiful anniversary show yesterday for 25 years of this program. You know, we'd like to go a little bit longer. And also, Wednesday was such a special day. We did a broadcast from Hartwick College and went to a community that we serve and talked to a diverse cross-section of the community that was in a room to talk to young people as well as their professors and colleagues and teachers and town officials. And, you know, that just, who else is doing that?
Yeah.
And the importance of that to get that information and just fascinating things that came out of that conversation.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it was a truly uplifting experience. And I say that as somebody who was both personally very glad that we were able to do something with and in service of that community. It was also wonderful to hear such a many perspective conversation. The students were so bright, so thoughtful, so intentionally empathetic. They knew their history. They understood the context of what's happening around them. And, you know, frankly, their attitude and their resilience was a lesson to us all. If those students are the future of our country, then everything is going to be okay. And that was what I took away from it.
Me too. And there were just such a smart, young, vibrant, wide-eyed mm-hmm. group of individuals who were from across the political spectrum
yeah.
and racially diverse. Mm-hmm. And gender diverse, and it was, I think, just a really special moment to have everybody speak. Judy, what do you make of all this?
You know, I come from this as a real lover of local media, and one of the wonderful things about radio and about public radio is that it's broadcast free everywhere to a wide range geography, and people who wouldn't normally be able to access this kind of information can get it for free or go online for free. You don't have a paywall. And at a time when all kinds of local media are under stress. I mean, we need organizations like public radio out there to continue to do the news, to act as a community resource. There are some newspapers still out there. There are some television stations still out there. There's new media arising, but no one does it from a broad spectrum like public radio, like WAMC. And there's a real concern. I'm worried about that being lost. I have every confidence that WAMC will thrive for the next, generation. But I don't like the symbolism of funding being withdrawn. I think that we need to understand that this is a critical time in our community's history, in our nation's history, in our world's history, and the ability for people to just flick on the radio. I guess people don't flick on the radio very much anymore, but and hear all sorts of different things from arts. You broadcast local musicians to food shows, to gardening, to birding, to the political discussions we have, to the debates you have with the mayoral candidates in Albany. I mean, that's a resource. That's a dissemination of information that really can't be lost.
And one of the things that is so, I think, discouraging is, and we've long said this here at WAMC, when we decide what we're going to do, if what project we're going to take, if we're going to do the mayoral primary or the mayoral candidate forum, what the question we ask is, if not us, who? Like, who else is going to do it? And here's the answer. Well, nobody, usually. We're the ones who will, by and large, take up that mantle.
That's right. And you know what? There are 290-odd other WAMCs across the country serving their communities in the way which their communities need them to. Now, I will say, obviously, I'm biased and WAMC is better than any of them. But then I would say that, wouldn't I? But, to pick up on Judy's point, this is a moment that public media was made for. It's not a moment when we should row back on local or regional or national or international news. Our ability to knit all of that together for our audience and engage them in a really vibrant, vital discussion about what all of this means and what our way forward is utterly essential.
So at the risk of leading the witness, let me just ask you this question. But for you coming to this radio station within the last year and a half?
Year. She started in August.
8 months, yes.
Jeepers. seems longer, doesn't it?
It does.
August 19th.
But it strikes me, because you were just saying about, of course, your allegiances are with this station. But to me, and again, this isn't a diss to anybody else, but what I have learned in the years, many years here, is that this audience is with us and understands. And I'm wondering your perspective on that, of as we go through these trials and tribulations, that we could wring our hands and we could cry, which we do.
Yes.
And in the fetal position in the corner, obviously. we're just those kind of people. But then you have the audience.
That's right. I mean, I will also own up to the odd wibble in a corner in a dark moment. But then you straighten up and fly right, because we have this community, and this community is second to none. I mean, you know this, Joe, perhaps our listeners don't. You can tell by the silly accent. I actually, spent a long time at the BBC and was actually for almost all of that time on the international desk. So, covering the Middle East, covering all sorts of big stories, breaking news stories around the world, and then crossed over to NPR in Washington, D.C. and did, a decade there as well. Loved both of those experiences. But I can tell you with my hand on my heart that only by coming to WAMC did I really understand what public media at a grassroots level what it does within a community and what the potential is for doing much more than that, and also how much it's, you know, our community and the coherent fabric of that community and our ability to be able to talk to each other respectfully as engaged citizens at this level and in this community, that is clearer to me than it ever has been.
Heather?
I mean, I don't know that I could say anything that would be different than what anyone else has said. I think I'm struggling with, you know, sort of the uncertainty. And I know, you know, in the context of a changing landscape, if, you know, as other businesses do, you have to figure out how to adjust. How do you adjust and move forward? I think that the service and the value that is provided by public radio is so important that, you know, we have to find a way. We have to find a way to either make up for it or get it back. And I think that's the bottom line. You know, the local aspect, having local candidates on, having forums where people can discuss the issues of the day that are meaningful and have a two-sided discussion. There's very few places where you can find that. And I think it's really important that that people have access to it.
I want to remind people that they can help us this morning, and they can, I mean, just making this station stronger and stronger is what we're going to need to do. WAMC.org. You can also call us 1-800-323-9262, 1-800-323-9262. We are very quiet in this room, but I hear that things are going bananas outside this room, and that shows your love and attention, and we thank you, but we must keep that up. 1-800-323-9262.
I'm high as a kite, and I won't win this fight with myself again. Mad love, spinning around like a carousel.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our discussion this morning, our panel discussion, and we have with us Judy Patrick, Heather Mulligan, Sarah LaDuke, the Roundtable producer, and of course, Sarah Gilbert, WAMC's CEO. The reason we have such an august panel is because President Donald Trump signed an executive order overnight directing the Corporation for Public Broadcasting to end federal funding for America's two biggest public broadcasters. PBS and NPR have faced a series of attacks from the White House and Republican lawmakers accusing them of biased reporting. The order instructs CPB's board to terminate direct funding for National Public Radio and the Public Broadcasting Service to the, quote, maximum extent allowed by law and shall decline to provide further funding, end quote. It also orders the board to take steps to minimize or eliminate indirect funding to NPR and PBS. Sarah Gilbert, is it unfair of me to ask you what that means?
Rephrase the question for me.
So this idea of what they are saying, of what the order instructs, is yeah. Maximum extent allowed by law and shall decline to provide future funding. Also orders the board to take steps to minimize or eliminate indirect funding to NPR and PBS.
Yeah, it's hard to sort through, isn't it?
Yes.
So what this essentially means is that the White House has instructed the CPB to prevent federal funds from going specifically to NPR and to PBS. Now, the way the system works, to put it into very broad brush strokes, is that money comes to member stations. Member stations pay NPR. I'm talking about specifically NPR and not PBS here, because that's my area of expertise. But stations contribute to NPR in order to support brilliant programming like Morning Edition, All Things Considered, and a rock solid, trustworthy newscast. Those shows are now somewhat in jeopardy. The situation is incredibly fluid and dynamic. Lots of conversations going on behind the scenes about what we can do to make sure that we are able to continue to deliver those products. But, you know, I don't doubt that we will, but we will need our community to support us.
And that's where you come in this morning, 1-800-323-9262, wamc.org, wamc.org. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting is a private entity, right? I mean, it's a private entity, and it's supposed to be protected from government interference, and that would include executive orders. And also, while you were sleeping, they're suing the Trump administration.
They are, and that's because the Trump administration has already informed three members of the CPB board that their services are no longer required. Those people were fired, and the CPB responded quickly with a lawsuit to argue that it is not a federal agency, and therefore the White House does not have the right or the ability to fire those individuals from their job, and that action is ongoing.
You have indicated a moment ago that, you know, we'll it's going to be a fight, but we're going to be okay.
Yeah.
Why are you so sure of that?
Why am I so sure? Well, so first of all, the community. But, you know, here's the thing that's really worth people remembering. And I know you all know this because we have blathered on about it for time immemorial. But in the general scheme of things, a small amount of money supports public media through the CPB. It's about $535 million. And, you know, a much smaller proportion of that money goes to NPR stations than go to PBS stations. PBS stations get more of that money because television is more expensive to produce. And as you know, PBS stations, generally speaking, produce educational programming. NPR stations are more focused on news, insight, debate. But, you know, these things, as we've been discussing all the way through, are just singular, unique. And I think the reason why we have such a great relationship with our audience is because people understand that in an increasingly fractured media environment, more choice doesn't mean more quality. We have seen calls for cuts to public broadcasting for as long as I can remember. And you name your disruption and you will have seen a call for cuts. First of all, you know, it's cable news. There's all this choice out there. Why would you need public media? Well, it turned out that choice didn't necessarily mean quality, and that advertisers were calling the shots on what kind of content was produced. And then, of course, you've got the internet, which was supposed to be, you know, a golden age of information sharing for everyone. Well, that didn't quite work out the way we'd hoped. And lastly, I'm going to land on social media, of course, which is it in its basic philosophy all about free speech. But anyone who's dipped their toe into that pond recently knows that it is something very, very different in lots of cases, and actually an incredibly unhealthy mechanism which can cause a lot of harm. And so, you know, I would argue, I think, well, I would say this, but I think compellingly that, you know, more choice, a more fractured media environment argues even more strongly for something which is very clear in its mission. It's very clear about being factual, about being gold standard, and about being accountable to the public alone.
And I know this is going to sound like a diss, and I don't really mean it quite as it's going to come out. Not to us, but, you know, you talk about just because there's more of it. So if there's a 24-hour cable news station, you would think, oh, they're going to cover 24 hours of news, and we're going to just get this diet, and we're going to have, you know, we're going to be wall to wall and figure out what's going on. And then after your 22nd hour of Shark Tank reruns, you think, oh, that's how they're going to use this time.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, just because there's a channel for everything doesn't mean that there is lots of choice in gold standard news, because news is hard to do well. It's expensive. And unless you are beholden to advertisers, you don't make money at it. That's why we exist.
The two things that I just want to point out for listeners is, and I know Judy wants to chime in on this as well, but I mean, one thing is that always the mission of WAMC has been to have a very strong news presence, a very strong newsroom, and really to spare no expense when it comes to that.
Yeah.
And that also, while we talk about NPR, we can't forget about our own gold standard mm-hmm. news department, which is really incredible. But again, really rare.
It is really rare. I mean, it's actually incredibly unusual for member stations to be able to deliver as much local and regional content as we do. We have bureaus all around our listening region. We have fantastic reporters. You know this. You don't need me to tell you. We devote a lot of our time to rigorous political coverage. We have cultural programming. We have just launched a new project called On the Road, which we were discussing a little earlier, which gets us out into communities and responding in real time to what those communities need and us helping them to platform conversations which they feel need to be had. We are present and delivering in all sorts of ways. And I have to say, anyone who's ever been to WAMC HQ will know that no money is spent on furnishings.
I can
None.
Vouch for that. Yeah.
It's not, we had people, well, Susan Arbetter was here yesterday after... how many years?
I think 18.
18 years
give or take.
Since she'd been in. And she goes, oh, it hasn't really changed a bit, has it?
No. Table is different.
It is different. It is different. Judy, you wanted to make a point, and then we'll go to some letters.
Yeah. Can I first make the point that last week when my daughter was driving my 10-year-old grandson to school, he said, hey, Mama, can you turn on NPR?
Oh, yes.
Isn't that sweet?
Yeah.
But my real point was... WAMC could have gotten away with a far less robust news presence, but it shows, and it continues to show, to invest a lot of money in a local news report. I covered media 25 years ago in my life as a reporter, and I can remember there were a lot of radio stations covering news, and now there aren't. And what you get from radio is coverage of state government. I love the midday report. A lot of people consume news that way. That's why podcasts are so popular, is that the storytelling audio and from an audio perspective is so much easier for people to take in. I was struck by that yesterday when I was listening to some of the clips from the old roundtable shows, where it shows how much goes into producing a segment. I mean, because people think, oh, you just write a story and print it. You just say words and put them on the air. It's far more complex than that. The reporters here, you know, they go out, they cover the news, they come back, they have to write scripts, they have to, and then they have to know the technical aspects of working a microphone and all those things you guys do. I mean, it's far more.
We've got some buttons.
Yeah,
we have
yeah.
some buttons in the
and
studio.
And it's far more complex.
It's magic.
But I don't think the person who is listening understands it. And I know you probably don't want to show them the inner workings, but to produce one really good segment can take a day, a two, or two. It's not easy. And so I just want to say that covering local news, especially the state news, I think is just a wonderful a benefit of public radio. And again, there are all sorts of different kinds of public radio stations, but this one has chosen to really focus on local. They could just do music all day, I think, and again serve the public in their own way, but this one knows that the people in their audience expect local news.
That is, that's another point that I was looking to make earlier is that from 9 a.m. until 4 p.m., it's WAMC programming. It's all local programming with the exception of the 1 o'clock hour.
Well, I just also would add, I think that the clips in, like on the BBC News and the NPR national news coverage is very good, and it's something that it's hard to find anywhere else. So when you overlay that with the local piece, it's sort of a place where you can go and get a great update on what's going on. That and the in-depth interviews with local elected officials, members of Congress, mayors. I mean, I think that's a real value because very few people have a chance to sit down and have those kinds of conversations with their local elected officials of both parties.
We're talking about President Trump signing an executive order overnight directing the Corporation for Public Broadcasting's board of directors to cease federal funding for NPR and PBS. We're talking about its importance. We're talking about how you can help. 1-800-323-9262. You know, we've been talking about this for a long time, and here it is. So yeah. If you want to help, it's the time to help. WAMC.org online or 1-800-323-9262. We have a lot of letters we'd like to get to as well. Let's take a quick break and we'll do that on the other side. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning, talking about the fact that President Trump has signed an executive order directing the Corporation for Public Broadcasting's board of directors to cease federal funding for NPR and PBS. This is something we all knew was coming within the building. We've been waiting for it. And you're like, okay, we're going to go away for a couple of days. You think it's going to happen while we're gone? Maybe next week. And what could happen on Monday? Well, here it is. So it happened Thursday night in the middle of the night, and we woke up to it this morning, and here we are. So we come to you and want to make this station as strong as we possibly can as we gear up for whatever the next several weeks and months bring us. We do know that court action will be a part of this, and it's not something that's going to be settled right away. But we certainly need to make sure that we're secure and funded and that we have what we need to do the job that we do. We have a lot of letters from people. The phones are ringing. People are going online. We thank you so much for that. And we need you to keep it going. 1-800-323-9262. 1-800-323-WAMC. And Sarah has a whole bunch of letters to read to us.
Of course, our listeners who email in regularly every morning are emailing in on this topic. And we are so grateful to hear from you and to know that you're out there supporting us. This first email is from Roger in Utica. It says, PBS NewsHour is by far the most impartial and complete general news broadcast. Perhaps it is exceeded only by CBS's 60 Minutes for lengthy investigative stories, but that is also under attack. Truthful history, science, nature, and children's programs are essential and generally not available anywhere else on broadcast TV. Education, universities, public schools, with public TV radio playing an important part of it, keeping the public well-informed with facts along with opinion. It is expensive. Ignorance is where we are collectively headed, but ignorance is even more expensive. Another disastrous decision, only one of many in which Congress should impeach Trump sooner rather than later for exceeding his constitutional authority. Now more than ever, it's time for people to contact Congress and financially support your local public radio and TV. And that, as I said, is from Roger in Utica. We also heard from Eric in Dingmans Ferry, Pennsylvania. He says, I donate once or twice per year, but with Trump's comments and the attack on NPR, I have now signed up for monthly donations. Eric then implores you all out there listening, come on, people, let's chip in and send Trump a message. Please donate what you can. Thank you, Eric. We heard from Yvette, who says, my small family and I are the folks who all of this cruelty in our country is going to affect and is already affecting. I'm saddened by what is being done in the name of faith and security. Both my son and I have come a long way, but we're not independently wealthy, but we are sustaining members of both PBS and WAMC because, yes, the truth is very, very radical, and because we believe that our young people need the truth to make good decisions. Thank you, all of you at the roundtable. Every day, you guys have been my friends. I enjoy my coffee and listen to good conversations. It helps get me through. And thank you for standing up for us and for vetted, truthful reporting. And that was from Yvette.
You just mentioned sustaining membership. We got a letter from John who said, in addition to pushing for donations, please also suggest sustaining memberships. I'm one, and the more the merrier. It is the baseline for the station, and that is so true. I mean, that's really, we know that money's going to be there.
Yeah. I mean, that is, in many ways, the most wonderful thing that you can do in this moment is to become a sustaining member if you are not already, and to recruit other sustaining members to the community. It doesn't matter what perspective they're coming from. Everybody is welcome. We enjoy a robust debate. And we will make sure that we preserve the space in which we can do that.
We also got a letter from Catherine who says, can someone please tell me what is woke and monstrous about gardening, StoryCorps, birds, and Marketplace?
No.
I don't know. That Rich Guthrie. We welcome you, panel. Panel at WAMC.org for your letters. We'd love to hear from you, panel at WAMC.org. We'd also love to have you support us and help us in this time. It's a hell of a time, and we need you more than ever. We've been talking about this for, you know, it seems like, I mean, yes, for months, but we've been talking about it really for years as to losing funding, and here we are. So WAMC, and by the way, again, we don't know exactly what's happening. We don't know exactly what's going on at the moment. We can't tell you definitively because there's a lot of language in there that doesn't, you know, needs to be dissected.
Yes, there's a word.
Yes, dissected. So once we figure that out, obviously we'll know more. But this is what I get out of it. Not good.
Not good. But you know, true to character, we will make sure that we are as transparent as possible with everybody, and we keep you up to date on what is happening as we understand it, and that is the best that we can do. The other thing that I would say is that, you know, this move comes in the context of a much wider attack on media. You have all been commenting on it, you know, as always. You have great thoughts and intelligent input. And, you know, we've read out many letters on air talking about, you know, big media corporations with very deep pockets deciding to settle lawsuits because, well, we'll leave the because for them to explain. But, you know, those with deep pockets have decided in some circumstances that they are going to bend the knee, and we are not going to do that. We are determined to remain independent and to serve our community in the best way that we can.
We welcome you, WAMC.org, WAMC.org. You can also pledge by calling us 1-800-323-9262. Some people say they're having trouble pledging, so there are two ways. One is online, and the other is by giving us a call. You can try both. But there are a lot of other people getting through. I think we have an issue too with just a lot of traffic going through. So, which is a lovely problem to have.
Yes, thank you, everyone.
And yet, we want.
We understand it can create frustration on the other
end.
Yes, if you're just trying to support your radio station, you can't get through. We apologize for that stress and thank you for your patience.
Yes, and we'll get it worked out. I promise. WAMC.org. 1-800-323-9262.
Jared wrote to panel at WAMC.org and says, I am happy to donate money to keep this important station open. It's time to turn up the heat on calling out Trump's regime as an authoritarian coup. This is a direct attack on democracy and freedom of thought and expression. We are all in this fight together now, not left versus right, but rich elites versus the middle and lower class Americans. And that's from Jared. We also have a letter here from, nope, that one won't make sense on the air. Pam, who says...
I'm assuming it included charts.
No, not exactly. Pam writes in and says, I've listened to WAMC since my senior year in college, 1966-67. Wow. Yep, in the old days. Returned to the Capital District in 72 and have listened ever since. You're my main source of news and current events together with PBS and BBC. I will be increasing my sustaining membership. You have my full support. And that's from Pam in Glens Falls.
It's really sweet, the love that is coming out. And I mean, one of the things, and I mean, you're what did you say, 8 months? You've been here 8 months?
Something like that, yes.
Since August 19th.
August 19th.
Thank you, Sarah.
You're welcome.
I'm assuming that you've, I mean, it's the audience is always there, and mm-hmm. they're so generous, and they understand the necessity and what needs to be done.
You know what? When I was interviewing for the job here, I remember turning up and it was in the middle of a fund drive.
Yes.
And so for those of you who have not had the pleasure of visiting us here, you walk straight into a hive of activity when you walk in through the front door. And I was immediately struck by the fact that everybody was sort of bustling around the place, very busy. I could see that volunteers were among the staff and helping out and manning phones and doing all of the things that needed to be done. And there was a general air of determined, clear-eyed mission about it, which you just, you know, that is a precious thing. You don't find that in many places. And as I have had the pleasure of being here and spent more time, it as I discover more about the staff and my colleagues and our volunteers and our communities, it is just like uncovering more layers of that onion. Wherever you go, there are people who are pleased to tell you about their relationship with WIMC. Sometimes they want to tell you what they think you should be doing better, but that's good.
Yes.
We like that. Talk to us. Tell us what you need. That's what we're here for.
It's absolutely correct. And, you know, kudos to our founder, Alan Chartok, who not only founded the station, but also built this community.
Yeah.
And throughout WAMC land, seven states, and brought this audience together with a shared mission of an understanding of how important what we do is. We're going to take a break. We're going to get a news update, and then we'll talk to our news director, Ian Pickus, about some of this as well. We welcome you, 1-800-323-9262. 1-800-323-WAMC, also WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
You know it wash away all of your
sadness. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Spending a lot of time this morning necessarily to discuss President Trump signing an executive order overnight, directing the Corporation for Public Broadcasting's board of directors to cease federal funding for NPR and PBS, as we've been talking about and as our news director Ian Pickus just spoke about in his newscast moments ago. Good morning, Ian. How are you?
I'm great. I'm in the other studio. I feel like a less talented and less funny Robin Quivers.
Yes, we have your own studio.
It looks like he's in a terrarium. Hey,
yes.
Babe, how's your heat rock?
But we got a good view of you, so that's good. As far as coverage, I mean, I find this really to be interesting, and because you were telling a story on the Media Project about just what our newsroom has been going through recently, and it just sort of gives you, I mean, I found it chilling as to sort of what's going on, how one thing impacts another.
Yeah, you know, and we're so fortunate. We have such a talented and hardworking news staff with the bureaus that Sarah Gilbert was mentioning across the Northeast. People whose heart is really in the right place. They work hard. It's so much of it is not a romantic job to do. And yeah, we've actually got a sort of happy outcome with a recent complaint that we filed with the town of Great Barrington. But it's illustrative of what local regional reporting can look like. And our Berkshire Bureau Chief, Josh Landes, who sent in the sound from Lennox annual town meeting that I just played in the last newscast. And I should say, you know, for an end user of that, it's just a soundbite. For Josh, it meant filing something last night at 10:30 p.m. and being on the morning news meeting the next day, ready to work again.
Right.
And much the same in Great Barrington, where there was a local vote on April 17th. And unfortunately, Josh had met some resistance trying to get in to cover the meeting. And to the point where we had a long conversation about whether we should try to draw a line in the sand for public access to a meeting like this. And is it worth making ourselves the story when the story should really be about residents' decision to vote to adopt the water district or not? But ultimately, we did decide to file a complaint because it wasn't the first time that it appeared that access was being in some way curtailed or applied arbitrarily. And the town of Great Barrington which was required to respond to that complaint from the April 17th meeting, ultimately said, you know what, this is a really good point. We're going to change some of our practices and you will not run into this same resistance going forward. That's a very small example of kind of what's at stake in all of this conversation. One, coverage of your local communities, which, you know, is we're very fortunate here, has always been a hallmark of what WAMC prioritizes. And two, in the aggregate, press access at a time when quite obviously, as we've been talking about this morning, that is in the firing line right now.
And that's the point. I mean, in the large world, this is making everything harder. But then that's filtering down to the local communities where it's also they're taking their orders, and it's becoming harder in some cases for reporters like ours to do their job.
You know, right. Sorry, go ahead.
Ian, and you need professional journalists to ask the right questions, to hold government officials accountable, and to push for the kind of transparency that you do. And it's not, it takes skill, it takes experience, and it often takes a whole newsroom.
And let me tell you just very briefly about a conversation that we had in there yesterday. You know, we're lucky to have some really talented young reporters who are, in some cases, you know, they're dealing with having an angry mayor on the phone for the first time or something. We're not ready to publish this story yet, so I'm going to keep the details vague. But yesterday, one of our new reporters came back from a meeting with a town supervisor. And the interview, you know, it had its challenges, and it was a little bit of a charged conversation. And Lucas Willard and I were saying, we have to give this town supervisor credit for sitting for an interview with you at this time when so many local officials will not take the call. They'll hide behind a statement. They will not interact with the press. They feel it's in some way not part of their job or beneath them to do so. And so even if it was in that moment a bit of a challenging experience to go through, we are at this moment where, you know, having the ability to question officials is not a uniform opportunity for everybody. And so, yes, you're absolutely right. I mean, that's really what our job is. Big towns, small towns, cities, governments, that's the role of public media, we think.
You've been trying to cover the impacts of what's happening at the federal level in terms of cuts to grants and programs at the local level. And that, too, has been challenging. I remember you talking about even trying to track down an ICE raid that you had heard about.
Yes, and that was also in Berkshire County, where, you know, it emerged later that maybe one local office had a heads up about this. The Pittsfield police and the mayor, you know, didn't know, and ICE will not confirm, you know, where it's doing something or when or what it has done in many cases. So it's a challenging moment, obviously, in this administration. But as Sarah Gilbert said in that soundbite, never more important to stay on the beat. It keeps us motivated, and I don't think this work will be done anytime soon. And no matter what sort of challenges there may be to an office like ours, where every AA battery for a recording kit is counted, we can't stop.
1-800-323-9262, WAMC.org. I don't mean to put you on the spot, Ian, and you can certainly bat this away if you wish to, but I was struck by what you were just talking about of to give credit to the town official to sit down and actually do the interview. But in this truth social statement from the president, Republicans must defend and totally disassociate themselves from NPR and PBS, the radical left monsters that so badly hurt our country. And I will say very selfishly, I was thinking, okay, but that's what we do on Congressional Corner, the show that you produce. I mean, that's you have a wonderful relationship with both Democratic and Republican congressional representatives who come on this show and talk about what it is they're doing in our community.
And I don't think that they should be afraid of that opportunity, because they're not talking to me. They're talking to their voters. They're talking to their constituents. And I think a lot of them do understand the importance of it. You know, the one sort of white whale of late has been Congressman Mike Lawler, whose town hall we covered earlier this week. Jesse King did two wonderful stories from that. And that town hall made national news because Lawler is known as, number one, someone who might run for governor, and number right. two, someone who's known as a more moderate Republican right now. He's on NPR all the time, which is part of my frustration for getting him back on the congressional corner, is he seems to understand the importance of showing up on public media. Now, we'll see how he might vote when given the chance on this. That's an open question. But you're right. You know, answering questions is sort of a basic thing that public officials are supposed to do. When they don't do it, you know, WAMC might lose a little bit by not having them on the congressional corner. But really, it's the 800,000 people that they represent in Congress who are not having a chance to hear from their representative.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's exactly right, Ian, and thank you for putting it so succinctly. I would add to everything that you said that we are, as a society, as a country, siloed enough. And those who are engaged civically know, because, and you tell us this every day of the week, those who want to create a more coherent, a cohesive society need to engage in a conversation about how we as citizens together build that future. And the only way to do that is to be open to the conversation.
And while I was just about to come on with you all, you know, I was working on a script for a story at noon that features, you know, members of the Republican Party and the Democratic Party in New York State talking about the budget agreement and the bills for that. And you know, we on the news side, we look at it as a Noah's Ark. And I think that's really how it will always be. And we just hope that people will take our calls.
Ian Pickus is our news director for WAMC. Ian, thank you so much.
We'll appreciate do it again it. In 25 years.
Oh, I'm sure we'll be hearing from you lots and lots on this subject and more. Thank you very, very much. 1-800-323-9262. We are looking for your help as we try to strengthen this radio station as we go through a tough time and a time that we knew was coming. I think we all expected, and then eventually over the last year or so it was promised, and here we are. So 1-800-323-9262, WAMC.org. Sarah Gilbert, I want to go back to something that you mentioned in our first hour, and you gave a total of the number of radio stations, public radio stations in the country. But one of the things that we've heard that came out of the quote-unquote hearing that took place, the Marjorie Taylor Greene hearing that took place, one of the concerns that really did come out was, so we're one thing, WAMC is one thing, but I'm also looking at the impact that this is going to have on small and rural public radio stations in this country.
Yeah, I mean, and in many ways, you know, those are the stations where there are those stations exist in places where there are very few other options.
Right.
You know, in many communities where the local newspaper is gone, NPR is the last man standing, certainly if you're looking for media which is free to everyone, as Judy was saying. You know, there is good gold standard journalism out there. A lot of it is behind a paywall. And a lot of it, you know, is produced by organizations with an agenda. And so if you're looking for something which at the very heart of its mission exists to inform and to include, then public media is pretty singular in that respect. And in rural areas, you know, where even access to a good internet signal isn't guaranteed, being able to listen to your public radio station is key.
1-800-323-9262, 1-800-323-WAMC, WAMC.org.
Or you can write to us at panel@WAMC.org if you wish to. Well, not or, and you can write to us. Desi wrote in from South Hadley, Massachusetts, and says, I start every day with your voices, grounded, thoughtful, and real. In a time when truth feels under siege, you are a lifeline to understanding and connection. One way I'm standing up for public media, because silencing you would silence something vital in all of us, is by writing, calling, and emailing my representatives and senators. If you silence one, you silence us all. Public radio is not background noise. It's how I stay informed, connected, and hopeful. Please protect CPB funding. And again, that's from Desi in South Hadley, Massachusetts. People are writing from all over our vast listening area. Peter wrote in, now from Saratoga Springs, New York, says, last year in the town of Milton, just outside of Saratoga Springs, a group of citizens were challenging a huge new development proposed by our town. We organized a town hall and 200 people attended. In addition to friends and neighbors attending, WAMC's Samantha Simmons was there to cover the story, and that's what local news coverage is all about. Equal time given to all sides of an issue so that informed opinions can be arrived at. Thanks, everyone. Off to contribute to WAMC. And again, that's from Peter in Saratoga Springs. Let's do another one. This is from Lisa. She doesn't say where she's from. We don't require that you do, but we just like to mention the townships if they are indicated here. Lisa says, good morning. I just wanted to say how much I love the station. I'm a member. And my niece, Catherine Marr, is the CEO of NPR. Her recent interview on The Daily Show is a wonderful ode to NPR and PBS. Definitely worth watching. Thanks for all you do.
That is definitely worth watching, without a doubt. You know, I heard something in, this was, I think, earlier in the week over the lawsuits that were done. The lawsuit that was done by CPB after the Trump administration, was it two or three members?
Three
members of the CPB board. And one of the things that came up that said one of the commentators was saying on CNN was saying, well, public radio and public television is going to have its work cut out for them because they're also going up against these other incredible issues like immigration and deportation and higher education and safety and security and the economy and tariffs and that all of this, like, this is yet one more thing that is being added to it. But thank God for, I believe it was Breonna Keeler who said, okay, but you wouldn't know about any of that if it wasn't.
That's right.
For NPR and PBS.
Yeah, that's right. Things start,
journalism, but
yeah,
yes.
That's right. Things start to happen in a vacuum if the public isn't informed of it. And the public needs to be informed about what's going on so that they can ask their elected representatives to do what they would like them to do. That's what it's all about. That's what a functioning society looks like.
1-800-323-9262. Judy?
We really should talk a little bit about the First Amendment and why it's such an important part
of our
democracy, because I think so many people don't understand what it's about and why it's important. And from my perspective, our country is stronger because we encourage dissent, that we listen to different voices. And at all levels, it seems, in the last 102 days, 103 days, or even the last 4 or 5 years, we've seen this attack on people's ability to express their viewpoints. Whenever I talk about it, people don't understand that hateful speech is part of free speech, too. Just because you don't agree with someone doesn't mean they don't have the right to say it. And you're seeing this. You're seeing this when newspapers, television stations, radio stations, even online sites are afraid to express their opinion or pull back on what they're reporting because they're worried about government government overreach. It has such a chilling effect on what reporters write, what people say. But for goodness sakes, we have to be happy, because I think there are reporters, there are media organizations, there are still out there, still asking the hard questions. And what our only saving grace here is for people who consume that media to subscribe, to become members. I mean, the power of the individual is paramount in this case, because express your support of good reporting, of good media, and you can do it in all sorts of ways. And again, I love the idea that people of all incomes can consume public media, because I worry we've gone past the day when newspapers were sold for a penny. I mean, that was a wonderful thing about newspapers 100 years ago, that it was such a easy form of information for everybody to consume. And so nowadays,
we're not even going to have pennies.
I love the New York Times, the Washington Post, but you know, their subscriptions can be expensive. And they can add up if you want to subscribe to more than one. I mean, one of my best investments in the last year has been to Wired magazine, which I'm getting a whole different perspective on technology and on politics. So but free media is really important for our democracy, because we want everybody has a vote, and we want everybody to be informed.
One of the things that I find interesting in looking at, say, newspapers versus radio, but I mean, you've been for years. One of the things that I talk about when we're on the air during fund drives is that this is all very fragile. There is an on-off switch to this radio station. It's as easy to turn it off as it is to turn it on.
Arguably easier to turn it off.
Yes, because it's a downward motion, assuming, unless there's a code. But whatever. the important thing, though, is that newspapers saw it differently. I mean, it was really taken out of your hands in a lot of ways. But certainly, again, there was an on button, an off button, and a lot of off buttons were pushed over the last 5-10 years.
You know, we took it for granted. The old expression, you don't argue with someone who buys ink by the barrel. Well, apparently you can, because we don't really buy that much ink anymore. So we did take the fact that the classified advertising was always going to be there, that our subscribers were always going to be there. We started to be worried about a generation ago, but we didn't really see what was coming for us. And so, I think that the readers, the listeners, the subscribers are starting to realize that it is indeed fragile. Pew Research does investigates this, and they realize that most people do not understand that local media is in financial distress. It's not something people understand. Even though we try to talk about it as much as we can, I was stunned at the fact that, you know, 70-80% of people had no idea that there was any stress being put on local media organizations. And it's there. It's been there. And it just is getting worse. We all in our business are trying to rebuild that relationship by encouraging or diversifying, by rebuilding the trust that so many people are trying to erode from us in new ways. So I think there's a lot of work to be done, but I have hope that we can that we are going to emerge from this period of time stronger, more effective, and more responsible to the people we serve.
I told you there were people that had hope, Sarah.
Yes, me too. And actually, can I just add a little bit to this conversation? I'm not sure if you guys noticed there was a Pew poll done about a month ago on the subject of support for public media. And what came out of that poll was a strong message, which said that, you know, 24% of U.S. adults say that NPR and PBS should not continue to receive federal funding. So the vast majority of people understand the value of what we deliver, this kind of conversation that we're engaged in, and want to see it continue.
Heather?
I was raised on PBS. My mother, I was born in the Peace Corps. When I was growing up in Syracuse, my mother believed that television rots your brain. So I was allowed to watch 2 hours of TV a week or unlimited PBS. So I would sit at a sewing machine in the attic, which was not air conditioned, and watch things like I, Claudius, and Upstairs, Downstairs,
yeah,
and some things that weren't necessarily appropriate for someone my age. But no, I mean, there was continuous programming. It was free. My parents were both public school teachers. We didn't have money. On the radio, in our living room, nonstop was NPR. That's where we got our news. And now, if you're getting your news on the internet, the paywall stuff will drive you crazy. If you want to read an article, you have to get a subscription, and that kind of stuff. And I know, we need to support local newspapers and everything. But if you want to get news and not have to go through the subscription and the paywall and all of that, you can go to, you know, you can go to public radio and and you can get it there. But I wanted to tell that story because I all of the shows on PBS when I was a kid were, they're familiar to me, and I was raised on them, and there's really great children's programming.
My Claudius is rough.
That was me when I was a teenager not being able to sleep, and so I'd like sneak up to the attic and turn on the TV. It was black and white, so you know, scary. Yeah.
So
I watched tons of Red Dwarf and the Black Adder on PBS.
Oh, yeah. Now you're talking.
Yeah, and yeah. It was like thought curry vindaloo was like a made up word until I left Saranac Lake and was like, oh, foods, got it.
Yeah.
I do remember as a kid having my mother say, "All creatures great and small are starting in just a half hour."
Which is why my entire youth I wanted to be a veterinarian and actually applied to Cornell, got in, and couldn't and did not end up going there because I couldn't afford it. But
this is the first series. There's a new one now, which is great too.
I was obsessed with becoming a veterinarian.
I think we might be the same person because I was too denied television as a child and told to go away and read a book, which probably didn't do me any harm, and had to pick an hour a week and it had to be approved and signed off on at the dining room table. And I too grew up on All Creatures Great and Small and wanted to be a veterinarian and then wandered off and went to be a journalist instead. But
it took me forever to figure out what wellies were. You probably knew what wellies were.
We could go into hours on the British class system on wellies. They're wellies to me, but if you're posh, they're Wellingtons.
Okay.
Aren't we learning a lot this morning? We're going to take a break. We're going to go to news, and we'll return on the other side. We welcome you. WAMC.org, 1-800-323-9262. We will be right back. No such luck, too much to prove, so much love, too much to lose. I'll never leave. I know this isn't the most important part of this morning, but that is Lucius from their new album, right, Sarah? That
yes,
is
indeed.
Really good stuff.
Their new self-titled album just out today. Fantastic, beautiful, my favorite band, love them so much. I know a lot of people listening like them too. We met them before their first full length album came out at Solid Sound. We played part of that yesterday.
Yeah, played a little bit
and
on
so
the anniversary
we've been
show.
Watching them and just adoring them. They keep partnering with incredibly cool musicians. Everybody they meet loves them and loves to work with them, and I'm so excited to know them and to get to experience their music regularly.
It's very, very cool and a nice diversion, although we will continue to talk about what is going on, which is today has to do with President Trump signing an executive order seeking to end federal funding for NPR and PBS. It's Trump instructed the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, this is from the New York Times, which funds public broadcasters in the U.S. to end federal funding for NPR and PBS to the extent allowed by law. The outlets receive only a small portion of their funding from Congress, with the rest coming from donors and sponsors. The immediate impact of the order was unclear. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a taxpayer-backed private entity created by an act of Congress, is funded 2 years in advance to protect it from political maneuvering. CPB is not a federal executive agency subject to the president's authority, according to Patricia Harrison, the president and CEO of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Congress directly authorized and funded CPB to be a private, nonprofit corporation wholly independent of the federal government. So that is what we are talking about this morning and, quite frankly, trying to make some sense of.
Yeah, that's right. This latest move is part of a multi-prong effort, along with an investigation launched by the FCC and various efforts underway on Capitol Hill through the rescission and the appropriations processes to defund and destabilize public media. So we're here this morning listening to some great emails and comments from you guys enjoying the conversation about what public media means to you and why it's so important. And you don't need me to tell you that this is a moment for public media to shine, actually, not to suffer. We are accountable only to you. We will make sure that everything that we say is factual and reliable. And we are free to anybody who wants to consume us. And that's so important right now.
So allow us, help us shine. We need your assistance as always, WAMC.org, 1-800-323-9262. The phones have been ringing all morning. The folks have gone to the website and helping us, and you're always there for us, and you're certainly proving that this morning. And we're getting a lot of letters.
We are getting a lot of letters. Before our last break, we were mentioning all creatures great and small. So speaking of creatures great and small, Rich Guthrie, our birdman, has written in.
Our birdman
says, now is the time for all good people to step up and come to the aid of their station. I'm going online to do just that. I'm changing my pledge to a sustaining pledge. Thank you so much, Rich.
Yay.
He also says, P.S. this month marks my 30th anniversary on air with WAMC discussing birds on Vox Pop. 30
wow.
years.
That's awesome.
Amazing. Gregory Callahan writes in and says, as Alan Chartok used to point out, while WAMC should be able to weather federal defunding, small rural stations may not, and that ultimately damages the system. They too are bricks in the wall. That is very true, Gregory. John wrote in and said, I just want to say you guys are all cheeky monkeys and I love it.
Oh, I like that.
How do you know what kind of monkeys we are? Oh, we're always putting ourselves out there. Okay, you are aware. The phone number, as Joe's been mentioning, is 800-323-9262. 800-323-9262. The website is WAMC.org. Frank wrote in from Cherry Valley and says, Roundtable at 25, Monty Python and the Holy Grail is 50. Where else could they have started? CBS, NBC, ABC? No way. Local support is what will keep WAMC going.
Wonderful. 1-800-323-9262, 1-800-323-WAMC. Obviously, we have, for good reason, we've been talking an awful lot about the news coverage and the what we do here at WAMC. And I was saying earlier, from 9 in the morning until 4 o'clock, that is all local programming, with the exception of the 1 o'clock hour, and then, of course, local programming throughout the early morning and latter parts of the day with the cut-ins for All Things Considered and Morning Edition, not to mention the weekend programming. But it's all a mix, and those shows that we run on the weekend and the shows that we run at night are also so important to people in such a what people know public radio to be in many cases.
Yeah. I mean, that is the joy and the glory of public media, is that, you know, it seeks to inform, it seeks to sustain, it seeks to delight, it seeks to include all of the things which are really part of great human endeavor and part of, you know, the best human experience that we can all hope for in life, and something that I think we're all trying to create for ourselves and those close to us. And so the more people that we can get to join the family and to be part of this conversation and this endeavor, the better off we'll all be. So please do, if you can, encourage your family and your friends, anyone you can find, the person you're walking past on the street, to become a member and possibly a sustaining member of WAMC.
This is the executive order, by the way. By the authority vested in me as president, by the Constitution and the laws of the United States of America, it is hereby ordered. Section 1, Purpose. National Public Radio and the Public Broadcasting Service, PBS, receive taxpayer funds through the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Unlike in 1967, when the CPB was established today, the media landscape is filled with abundant, diverse, and innovative news options. Government funding of news media in this environment is not only outdated and unnecessary, but corrosive to the appearance of journalistic independence. At the very least, Americans have the right to expect that if their tax dollars fund public broadcasting at all, they fund only fair, accurate, unbiased, and nonpartisan news coverage. No media outlet has a constitutional right to taxpayer subsidies, and the government is entitled to determine which categories of activities to subsidize. The CBB's governing statute reflects principles of impartiality. The CBB may not contribute to or otherwise support any political party. I therefore instruct the CPB Board of Directors and all executive departments and agencies to cease federal funding for NPR and PBS. Section 2 is instructions for the CPB. The CPB shall cease direct funding to PBS consistent with my administration to ensure that federal funding does not support biased and partisan news coverage. The CPB Board shall cancel existing direct funding to the maximum extent allowed by law and shall decline to provide future funding. And it goes on to say that the Secretary of Health and Human Services shall determine whether the Public Broadcasting Service and National Public Radio or any successor organization are complying with the statutory mandate that no person shall be subjected to discrimination in employment on the grounds of race, color, religion, national origin, or sex. In the event of a finding of noncompliance, the Secretary of Health and Human Services shall take appropriate corrective action. I didn't realize the Health and Human Service, HHS, was a part of this.
I mean, I have a fundamental reaction to that, which is that the public has a right to free and trustworthy information, and nobody should have the power to deny them that right.
You're seeing, the executive order talked about the abundant sources of news out
there
nowadays. And what many people may not be aware of is the fact that in some of these places, especially rural places without where the local newspaper has gone away, we have seen a rise what we call pink slime journalism, which is really not journalism at all, but it is manufactured journalism, definitely partisan, typically right-wing partisan, and it's not factual. It's biased, and oftentimes it's AI produced in it, and it's not local. I mean, it has a sheen of local quality to it, but it's not accountability journalism. It's not reflecting the community in any way. And the rise of pink slime journalism is something we all need to be aware of. They sound like legitimate, especially websites typically. They sound like they're legitimate, but take a good hard look at them before you start sharing their content.
I just wanted to take another angle on that also, which is, this station does these congressional corners, and that came up earlier in the show. The congressional corner, you get an extended interview with an elected member of Congress. You're not going to get that kind of insight into that person's character, their views, their beliefs anywhere else. And if you live in a district where it's a contested seat, you're going to be bombarded with information that is very negative often and very frequently not necessarily accurate. And I think having an extended interview with the person where you get in their own words what their positions are is really, really invaluable to people who you don't know what the information that's coming in your mailbox every single day. You don't know what to believe. If you listen to them on the show, this is the only place where you can get that kind of information, that kind of really insight into the character. And that goes for both parties. It's bipartisan. I think there's been interviews with local members of Congress of both parties. And
we invite all of them. Some of them don't come, but Ian and frequently reaches out to all of the reps in the region.
Yeah, I don't think there's another place where you can get that.
No, I mean, it's quite frankly, it was why it was created, because there was no other place for it. And that's why we made the time for it, because it was so rare. And brings me back to what I was saying earlier of like, okay, if not us, who? What else happens?
And we're just talking about that one segment right now, but we also, during elections, invite all of the candidates for all of the races as well, so you can hear who you are going to choose to vote for. and hear from them directly again, answering a lot of policy and stance questions.
That's right. And actually, you will have heard us before the last election. We designed a series of deep dives into a lot of the issues and policies which were top of mind, but also a lot of the stuff that wasn't getting a lot of attention, that, you know, wasn't part of the horse race coverage that you can get everywhere else. I mean, we're here to offer depth, to offer context, to offer facts, to offer multiple perspectives on things. And that is, as you're saying, you guys, it's not available anywhere else.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll finish up, and then we'll have a final hour of the roundtable. We welcome you to help us out. WAMC.org, 1-800-323-9262, 1-800-323-WAMC. We'll continue our conversation after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We have our CEO, Sarah Gilbert, with us, and the producer of this program, Sarah LaDuke. We also have two wonderful panelists, Judy Patrick and Heather Mulligan. We've got about 10 minutes or so left that we're going to talk about this issue of the president signing the executive order to direct the CPB to cease federal funding for NPR and PBS. And we are really overwhelmed by the love and support that you have shown in the last 2 hours. And the money is coming in, and we thank you. And it's really important, because we're trying to, and this goes beyond a rainy day fund.
Yeah. That's right. I mean, it's just so impressive to me. And, I, you know, really so much credit is due to Alan. He built an amazing community of people. He built an amazing station and organization. And everybody is very clear-eyed and devoted to the thing that we are trying to achieve together. You know, it's not just us talking to you. As you know, you are very, very good at telling us what you think and engaging in a conversation and helping to shape the conversation, and also helping to tell us where to go next. Next week, actually, we will be launching a little series to show just a little bit of our appreciation of you. I don't want to ruin the surprise, but we've been making some calls to people who have been most helpful and most loyal, just to ask them what WAMC and what public media means to them. And there's some lovely, lovely conversations in there. Thank you all so much.
Well, and to each person, just to think about that, of what WAMC means to you and at this time, and how important it is to you, and to help in any possible way you can. And that help can come in a variety of ways. Sarah and I talk about this all the time when we're pitching. If you can, you know, if you can give money, great. If you can't, you can volunteer and to help and to support. You talked about just signing up for the newsletter, Sarah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's all important things that help support WAMC.
That's right. John wrote in and says, every crisis is an opportunity, which I think is a great framing, very optimistic and helpful. John says, every crisis is an opportunity, and we can turn this around to make NPR even stronger with the help of true philanthropy. What we need are the modern Carnegies and Vanderbilts that will allow public radio and TV to be free from government funding and free from influence. We also heard from Tom, who says, I just heard you read the stomach-churning latest poison Sharpie order. According to the terms put forward, Fox should be shut down immediately. Fox isn't a public station, but I understand. Thank you for that, Tom. 1-800-323-9262 to support us.
But it is an interesting point, isn't it, Sarah Gilbert? Because while this particular order is going after public media, ABC, CBS, I mean, they've got their own crosses to bear.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, they have their crosses to bear, and there are also some self-imposed wounds. I mean, look what's going on at the Washington Post.
Right.
You've got a feel for, you know, the journalists and community around the Washington Post, where, you know, free speech is being suppressed.
I mean, what's happening with 60 Minutes is really, I think, very is an illustration of what can and may very well happen.
I mean, a landmark program for many years was the top-rated program in the country every week. And it's a must-watch television, and it did such great investigative reporting. It's had, you know, it's in the past has had challenges from presidential administrations. I mean, they have come, but they have always stood firmly in the past. But now that their parent organization is seeking a merger with another company, they do not want to run afoul of the Trump administration. And so they are making whatever they're doing was enough of an imposition on the producer of the program, Bill Owens, that he thought he could no longer do his work independently, and he resigned. It was a great loss for 60 Minutes. But kudos to the anchors at 60 Minutes and to the CBS Evening News for at least coming forward and telling their audiences, this is what happened. I mean, it's a small effort. It was a courageous effort. And I think that's what we all need at this point. We need courage. We need to continue to speak our minds.
Does it make it harder for public media when you have commercial entities, for want of a better term, caving of make what we're doing in this of trying to stand up to it harder?
I don't know that it makes it harder. It makes it more important that we do stand up. Yeah. I will say that quite clearly. I mean, you know, we are not beholden to the sorts of characters who make decisions in commercial organizations. We don't have advertisers. We have sponsors, but we don't have advertisers. They don't tell us what kind of content they want us to run. We don't have algorithms controlling what kind of content we push to our audiences, depending on what...
Clearly.
Yes. Yeah. If you were an algorithm, that would be special.
Yeah, clearly.
You know, there are no oligarchs here. And this really is an organization which is only accountable to you, the listeners, and the public. That's what it's created to do.
And it's also fascinating to me in this environment, and which seems so odd because with all of this happening, I mean, just I'm still in the 100-day time frame, so you know we're 100 days mm-hmm. in, and you're just constantly looking for information, and then we're having this conversation about okay, but how do you get, you know, real, true, factual information? And it does. I mean, we've been saying this all morning, but it makes it all the more important to be able to find something that you trust, find something that explains it to you, because it's all so dense and hard to understand.
And a lot of times it's purposely non-transparent, the kind of information we're getting from the federal government about what's happening, who's being deported, what cuts has DOGE made. I mean, thank goodness we still have reporters digging, trying to get unearth this information. That mechanism is still working. So we have to support that where we see it. Thank goodness we have them. We have solid reporters still out there at press conferences asking some questions and, you know, overriding some of the problem questions.
Sure. We have panel at WAMC.org. Mary Jane wrote in and said, in addition to the programming, WAMC is a contributing member of the community. During the fund drives, WAMC highlights and contributes and makes contribution available to local nonprofits. We, the listeners, become aware of their good work. WAMC connects us. So some of the listeners writing in reminding us of some of the other good things we try to do so that we can remind their fellow listeners that is one of the things that we're available for as well.
1-800-323-9262, 1-800-323-WAMC. Again, we thank you for your love and your support this morning. And we're really just beginning as far as reaching out and reminding you of how important this is. And we have quite a long road ahead of us as far as making the money, but we'll do it.
Yeah. I mean, we will, yes, that. But I'll tell you what, we are mostly focused on making sure that we are out there across our listening region, reporting rigorously on everything that's going on. We took a little bit of a break this morning to tell you about what's going on in our world behind the scenes. But for us, you know, there's a job to be done, and we are absolutely clear-eyed about doing it.
We actually have a normal show, I think, on Monday.
don't count your chickens, dear.
Wednesday we were at Oneonta, right, then we had our anniversary, yeah, then today, so yeah, it's all different.
It's scheduled to be a regular program.
That's right. Any final thoughts, Heather Mulligan?
No, I just go back to the importance of the local coverage, that you really can't get the kind of in-depth coverage and stories about local issues anywhere else, and it really is important.
It absolutely is important. We want people to keep giving, keep helping us in any way you can. WAMC.org. Just because we will stop yapping the phone number and the website doesn't mean that you have to stop going there. And we welcome you to do that. WAMC.org, WAMC.org. And coming up, we will do our next hour of programming, and we'll continue. But again, we welcome you to keep going. WAMC.org, 1-800-323-9262. It'll all be okay, right, Sarah Gilbert?
Of course it will, Joe.
Everything's going to be okay.
It will.
I don't think I'm telling tales out of school, but I did. I asked Sarah this morning, and she said maybe 10 minutes or so. And she'd been here for 2 hours.
Yeah.
So thank you very much.
Well, thanks to everyone else for being part of the conversation, too. It's been fun.
Appreciate it. 1-800-323-9262.